Now, we're holding on page Yud Tes in Yevamos, almost the end of Os Mem Gimel, about three lines from the bottom of the Os. We learned the last couple of times all about the Nisinim, the whole story with the Nisinim, otherwise known as Givonim, where with the whole story with the famine in David's times and them demanding to take some descendants of Shaul and kill them and all the stories surrounding that. So we said in the end, because of all of that, David made a gzera that they should never intermarry into the Jewish people, because we said the Jewish people are Rachmonim, Bashanim, and Gomel Chasadim, and they demonstrated themselves to be none of the above. So the question is, the Gemara asks, so Nesinim David Gozer Aleihem, you're telling me that David is the one who made the gzera that nobody should ever intermarry with the Nesinim? Moshe Gozer Aleihem, don't we find that Moshe, a few hundred years earlier, did that? As we find at the beginning of Parashas Nitzavim, when it mentions all the groups of Jews who are standing after Nitzav Mayim Kochem, and after it mentions all the regular Jews, it finishes off which means, in other words, the fact that it's listing them separately means that they're a separate class, not part of the regular Jewish people, and they are. Rashi brings on the pasuk that you have the same way as the Givonim came in Yoshua's times, and they claimed to be from a faraway country, and they became Gerim. Similarly, there were groups like that who did the same thing in Moshe's times, and they were also made Chot Ve'etz B'Shoyev Imayim. So we see that already existed from Moshe's times. The answer is Moshe Gozolahu Dora. Moshe made a Gzera about the Chot Ve'etz B'Shoyev Imayim, these people who came and tricked their way into becoming Gerim. He made a Gzera for his generation that they shouldn't intermarry into the Jewish people. The David Gozol Kol Adora, whereas David remade the Gzera for all future generations. Well, the question is, Vakati Yeshua Gozer Alayu. Still, in between Moshe and David, we have Yeshua, and he's the one who made the Gzera for all time. Dichtiv, Vayitnim, after the whole story with the Givonim, Vayitnim Yeshua Vayimahu Chot Ve'etzim Vagomer, that Yeshua made them to be wood choppers and water drawers, and there the Pasuk says, Rashi brings, that Yeshua tells them, Lo Yikores Mikem Chot Ve'etzim. There's never going to cease from among you those who are chopping wood and drawing water. So you're going to be in that job forever. So then Yeshua, when he did that, what did David add? The answer is Yeshua Gozer B'Zman Shebeis Mikdash Kayim. Yeshua made the Gzera that they shouldn't intermarry with the Jewish people only as long as the Beis Mikdash is standing. As in fact, the pasuk finishes off over there, then he made them choit ve'etz v'shev v'mayim, or the mizbach Hashem, for the Mishkan and for the Mizbeach. Implying that when there's no Mishkan and no Beis Mikdash, then they're not doing that anymore. So David gozeb is manshev Beis Mikdash Kayim, whereas David extended that zera even to when the Beis Mikdash is not standing. Now, we touched on at the beginning of the sugya, there is a big machlokas we showed him on that. Rashi and the Baal HaMor learn at face value that before, without these gzeiros, it would have been perfectly mutter for them to intermarry into the Jewish people. And then we're saying we had three degrees of gzeira. Moshe only for that generation, Yeshua as long as the Beis Mikdash is standing, and David forever. But were it not for that, midaraisa, they would be allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. Now that depends on a few blocks earlier, the Gemara had brought a point that Rava said that when the Torah tells us loisis chatin bom, you're not allowed to intermarry with the seven nations of Canaan. So Rava had said that would apply even after they converted. But according to that, it would mean that the Gemara is rejecting that, and the Gemara is saying that no, after they converted, it would be perfectly fine to intermarry with them, except that the Givonim were an exception to the rule, as we're saying over here. Tosfos discusses at length over here in Yevamos and also in Ksuvos and so forth. Tosfos discusses and brings that not necessarily. The fact that we might actually accept Rava's point that Daraisi, you're not allowed to intermarry with them even after they converted, and that would apply to all the seven nations of Canaan. So what it would mean is over here that Moshe and Yeshua and David respectively made a gzera on them that they should be avodim, that they should be slaves. And once they are, nobody's going to want to intermarry with them. But to actually be allowed to marry them, that would be also Tosfos, or Rabbeinu Tam learns in Tosfos, would actually be also on a daraisa level in the first place. One thing worth mentioning before we leave the Givonim is After all, the fact that they stayed with the Jewish people throughout all the generations does speak well for them, despite the fact we're saying they had terrible midas relative to the Jewish people. They did stay with them throughout the first Beis Hamikdash. They went with them in Golus Bavel, and even when they returned from Golus Bavel, which we're going to talk about in the next piece over here, the Psukim in Ezra and Nehemiah mentioned that there were Givonim who came back as well to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash and resettle Yerushalayim and resettle Eretz Yisrael. You have the famous, false Nabi Hananiah ben Azur, where the Gemara actually tells us in Sanhedrin, he actually started out as a true Nabi and then he went bad, but the Pasuk mentions he was from Givon, and Rashi on the Pesukim in Yirmiyah explains that he was actually a descendant of the Givonim. So he was a descendant of the Givonim, and he became a Nabi, he became a true Nabi to begin with, except that then he went bad. Not everybody agrees to that, though, mind you. The Kuzari actually writes, and he says it's impossible for Gerim to become Nevi'im. Now, obviously, not everybody agrees to that, because, for example, if nothing else, we have Evadia, where the Gemara tells us he was a Ger, and he was a Novi, but evidently the Kuzari would disagree, and say that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi would disagree, and say that Evadia the Novi was not, in fact, a Ger. But in any case,
the Kuzari himself,
You're thinking of the king of the Kuzari, whom the whole story is based on the historical facts of the king of the Kuzari, of the Khazars converting. Yeah, so the whole Sefer Kuzari is built around, it's all a dialogue between that king and a Chacham. But the author himself, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, no, he was a Levi, he was a born Yid. Yeah. Anyway. Yesh Mutoris Perakchi. So the Perak begins by talking about you have various cases that you can picture where a woman is perfectly mutter to be married to her husband, but she'd be also to do yibum with her brother-in-law. Say, for example, a simple case is, let's say the woman was an almana and she married a regular kohen, which is perfectly fine. Now, let's say his only surviving brother is a kohen gadol, and a kohen gadol can't marry an almana. And it goes through, you have the other way around, she was also to her husband, but is mutter to her yavam, she's also to both of them, she's mutter to both of them. Anyway, then it goes on in the perek, it revisits the whole matter of wives and families of Koyanim eating truma, which it had dealt with in a previous perek. We had a little bit about it at the end of the previous perek about a woman who conceivably has one grandson who's a mamzer and another grandson who's a Kohen Gadol, and the one who's a mamzer makes it possible for eat truma, and the one who's a Kohen Gadol prevents her from doing so. Anyway, so now in this perek, it gets back to some of these dinim of who's allowed and not allowed to eat truma among families of Koyanim. So in the course of that, eventually it gets into a discussion of Maiserishin as well. So the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, Truma Lakoyin, Maiserishin Lalevi, Divir Rabakiv. Rabakiva says that Truma goes to a Koyin and Maiserishin goes to a Levi, exactly as it says in the Psukim. Rabbi Lozman Azaria Oimel Lakoyin. Rabbi Lozman Azaria says that Maiserishin goes to a Koyin. So you have to ask, what do you mean, Lakoyin Valeva Levi? What do you mean? Rabbi Lozman Ben Azaria is saying that Maiserishin goes only to a Koyin, not to a Levi. It says clearly in the Psukim that at the end of Parashas Korach, it says that my submission goes to the Levim. Ela ema af, so ema af l'koyin. Right, what Rabbi Lozman Azai means, he doesn't mean that it can only go to Koyanim, he means that you could give it to Koyanim or to Levim. He holds that it's either one. As the Gemara is going to explain further on, well, the Gemara is going to explain where they each get it in Psukim, but there's also, the Gemara is going to point out further on, that at a certain point in history, at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, Ezra penalized the Levim and took away the right from them to get Maaser, and now Rabbi Lozer and now Rabbi Lozer and Azariah and Rabbi Akiva are arguing what the scope of that Gzeira was. So first, my time at Rabbi Akiva. So why does Rabbi Akiva say my submission goes to the Levi exclusively? The pasuk says, speak to Levim and tell them you're going to receive my submission from the Jewish people and you're going to give Trumas Maaser from it to the Kohen. So clearly the Levim come a shtori kra. So clearly the pasuk is referring to Levim and telling them in turn you have to give a portion of what you got to the Kohenim. The Idach, well, what does Rabbi Lozman ben Azariah answer to that? He says, Kedira Rishrub and Levi. You know what? You don't have to understand that pasuk is referring to the Levim. It could be like what Rabbi Rishrub and Levi says. There are 24 places in Tanakh where the Koyanim are called by the name Levim, because after all, they do come from Shevet Levi. One of them is in Yechezkel. We have at the beginning of the Haftarah of Parshas Emor, where it says the Kohenim, the Levim, the sons of Tzadik. Tzadik was a Kohen. He was the Kohen Gadol in the times of Shlomo HaMelech. He was the first Kohen Gadol in the first Beis Hamikdash. So we see that sometimes that the Kohenim are called Levim, and there are many other examples. The Gemara mentions this point in a few places in Shas. It never actually lists what the 24 places are, and there are a couple of Achronim that offer various possibilities. In any case, the point is, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is not bothered by the fact that it says Vela Levim, because here it's one of the places where it refers to Kohenim. First of all, the Kohenim, again, the Kohenim are descended from Shevet Levi, and of course you have, on that particular pasuk, that Kohenim Levim Neid Tzadik, there is the famous explanation in Chassidus that the Kohenim of nowadays will be, that the Levim of nowadays will be the Kohenim Lassid Lava, and you have the whole point about the Shodash and Neshama, where the Levim are rooted in Gvura, the Kohenim in Chesed, and Lassid Lava, the Kohenim are going to be rooted in Gvura as well, so yeah. Okay. So, Rabbi Akiva, so what does Rabbi Akiva answer back to that? Hochalei Motzis Amrit. He says, look, Rabbi Akiva says, you can't say over here that Levim over here means Kohenim as well. Because the Pasuk says regarding Maiserishin that you can eat it anywhere. Now, anywhere means even in a place that's Tomei. That implies Misha Yochal Oichloi B'chol Mokim. So that means that Maiserishin is meant to be given only to the people who can eat it anywhere. Yotze Kohen Shein Yochal Oichlo BeBeis HaKvaris, as opposed to a Kohen would not be able to eat it in a Beis HaKvaris because he's not allowed to go in there. He can't become Tomei. So those words itself and the Pasuk imply that we're clearly talking about Levim and not Kohenim. V'idoch, what does Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah answer to that? He says, Faket, the Pasuk is telling you, Kol Heicha de Boi, Faket, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying, it means that the Torah is telling you, don't think that Maaser Rishon is like Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni, you can only eat inside the walls of your Shalayim, and you have to be tougher when you eat it, and so forth. So no, what it means is, Faket, the Pasuk is telling you, go ahead, eat Maaser Rishon wherever you want. Deloi Boi Choyma. You don't need walls. You don't need to eat it within the walls of Yerushalayim. The ochale b'tumas aguf lo loki. And if he eats it when he's tomei, he's not going to get malchus. So both of them agree. In other words, that b'achal t'maisa b'chol mokim is telling us a particular din. Rabbi Akiva is taking that to mean as basically a milk. It means that maiserishin goes only to those who would be able to eat it anywhere, not those who can't eat it in a place which is tomei, namely kohenim. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is taking it exactly the other way around. He's saying, Fakir, it's saying that when you're eating it, you can eat it any place outside of your Shalayim, and it doesn't matter whether you're Tomei or not. Obviously, yes, a Kohen can't go into a Beis HaKvaris if that's where the Maaser Rishon is located and eat it, but nevertheless, he doesn't have to worry about the fact that it's Tomei, he doesn't have to worry about that he's Tomei, and he can eat it wherever he wants. Well, the Gemara says, Hahi Ginsa, there was a certain garden to have a shoko Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Maaser Rishon Mina. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah used to regularly get Maaser Rishon from the produce of that garden. Because again, he held that Kohenim can get Maaser Rishon as well. Also, Rabbi Akiva, Ahadre Lepischa LeBeit Kivri. Rabbi Akiva went and turned the entrance of that garden to face a cemetery. So in other words, the Yerushalmi actually, when it brings the story, explains that this garden had two entrances, and Rabbi Akiva ordered that one of them should be closed up, and the only entrance that should be left open is the one where you'd have to go through a cemetery to get it. Meaning, in other words, in effect, therefore, he's going to prevent Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah from going in there and getting it. Omar said, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says on it, Akiva b'tarmiloi. Akiva has his bag with him, his shepherd's bag, a tarmil is a bag, it's a leather bag that shepherds typically use to keep their food and other things like that. So Akiva is coming with his shepherd's bag, meaning Rashi points out, as we know, Rabbi Akiva was first the shepherd of Kalva Savua. Va'anochaye, and I am living. Now, there's actually a couple of different ways that the Meforshim have to explain that phrase. It can mean a statement, meaning basically that he's saying, okay, let Rabbi Akiva come with his bag, let him try to prevent me from getting this Maaser Rishon. Doesn't matter, I'll live. I have plenty of other sources of income. We know Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was extremely rich. So in other words, he's saying, fine, he wants to act like a shepherd. He wants to try and block me from getting something that I should get. Doesn't matter, I can live. I have other ways of living and getting it as well.
So what's his reasoning behind to go behind that going to say the if he's so rich, what does it mean?
So the Gemara is going to point that out soon. But basically, he was holding that since my tradition can be given to a Levi or to a Kohen, he's a Kohen, he's 10th generation from Ezra, so therefore we figured he has every right to it. But the Gemara is going to point out soon what exactly Rabbi Akiva was thinking in denying it to him, and what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was thinking in taking it in the first place. But anyway, so that's one explanation. The other explanation is he's saying it as a rhetorical question. Akiva Batamila, look at this. Akiva is coming with his bag to harass me and to prevent me from getting it. How am I going to be able to live? Meaning not, in other words, like I don't have anything else to live off of. But almost like sarcastic, but also, actually, Ben Yehoyada says an interesting vote on it. He says that, first of all, what's he saying, Akiva B'Tamilai? Since you're not allowed to mention a person, what his past was, that Akiva used to be an Amoritz and used to be a shepherd and everything. So he says the interesting point is, what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah means is, Rabbi Akiva not only has the Chochmah of Torah, he has the practical smarts that he got back when he was a shepherd, as opposed to, I never had that because I never had that experience, and I see he's still using that. So, how am I going to be able to handle such a person who has not only the Chochmah of Torah, but also street smarts? Then he goes on to say, also, the Van Nochaye is, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah held, as the Gemara is going to go on to say over here, that because Ezra had penalized, and Ezra was his own ancestor, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, that because Ezra had penalized the Levim, therefore Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah held that it should dafka go to a Kohen and not to a Levi, as we said before. So now he's saying, in other words, I'm going to lack the mitzvah of Kibud Av, of honoring my ancestor Ezra by being able to by following his takana. So v'anochaye, how am I going to have the life that the Torah promises, l'man yarichun yamecha, for Kibud Av v'ein? So in fact, Ion Yaakov points out that is exactly why. I mean, the fact is, though, you could so what? He could still go and get the Meiser, so what? So he could send somebody to go into the Beis HaKvaros and then walk through there and get the Meiser from the garden. But nevertheless, the fact that Rabbi Akiva did it this way and made the entrance face only the garden was to hint at the very point that Rabbi Akiva had learned the din from that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had learned from that. We learn from the pasuk "Achaltem oisim b'chomokim" Rabbi Akiva, that it's not for a kohen who cannot eat it because he can't go through a Beis HaKvaros. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva actually showed that in practice by changing the location of the gate, and therefore Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying, "Fine, I understand. I'm not going to try to get around that." So Itmar, so we have a further discussion about that. Why would the Levium penalize to not receive the Meiser? Now Rashi points out that this is not a direct continuation of what we said before. There's two different things. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva are arguing on the basic din midaraisa. Are Levium exclusively getting Meiserishin, or is it going equally well to Kohenim as well? So that we just said they're learning from their respective psukim, and then they're learning from their respective psukim. But now the Gemara is bringing up a side point, kind of, which is we find in various places in Shas that Rabbi Akiva penalized the Levium to not give them Meiser. So part of the question is what exactly was the nature of that knas? It's going to depend. According to Rabbi Akiva, the nature of it was that the Levium or the Kohenim could get it, and according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that exclusively the Kohenim should get it. How long that takana lasted for is another question as well. From our Gemara, which it's going to talk about over here, seems to imply that it was forever. Once Ezra made that takana, made that knas, then it lasts for all time. On the other hand, the Rambam writes that he did it only for the Levium of his generation, and in that case, for sure, it doesn't really directly connect with the story of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva. With that said, the Gemara does tie them together, so that implies that it did continue on for some time, because Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva are living a few hundred years after Ezra. We're going to talk about why he did that. So, Pligibar Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Yonasan v'Savaya. So Rabbi Yochanan and Savaya argue. Now Savaya could actually be the name of a person, Savaya or Savia or whatever. Or it could actually be that it could mean the elders. In other words, you have the older elder Talmud Chachamim that Rabbi Akiva is arguing, Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Yonasan is arguing with them. Anyway, Chad Amar Shalai Olor B'nei Ezra. One said the reason was because the Levim did not come to Eretz Yisrael in the time of Ezra, as the Gemara is going to quote a few lines further down, that we find when Ezra was bringing his group to Eretz Yisrael, then he couldn't find any Levium among them, and he had to send messengers back to Babel to get some Levium. Now, everybody asks on that you have in the Pesukim before that, earlier in Sefer Ezra, that Ezra himself and his group arrived in Eretz Yisrael shortly after the second Beis Mikdash was finished being built. They started building it, when Kodesh gave his proclamation. Then it was stopped for many years. Then they started it again when the Nevi'im told them to restart. It was 70 years since the Churban. It was the second year of King Daryavesh, the son of Achashverosh and Esther. They finished it 4 years later in the sixth year. Then the Pasuk says, in the following year, the seventh year of Daryavesh, is when Ezra left Babel and a few months later came to Eretz Yisrael. So he and his group came after the Beis Mikdash was already built, and it's clear from Pesukim that there were already Levi'im there. So Rashi explains in other places where the Gemara brings this point that the Levium that were there were only the ones, where Tosfos brings it over here, that they were only the ones who had chopped off their, or bit off their thumbs. What happened is, the Medrash tells us many years earlier, when the Jewish people were first taken into Golos after the Churban Bayis tradition, so you had, there were many Levium among them, and we have, as we have in the Kapitel Tilim, Al Naris Babel. We're sitting over there, B'zachreinu Aszion, and Kisham She'elunu She'veinu, though our captors demanded of us, Divrei Shir, to sing words of song, B'sololeinu Simcha, and our captors asked of us to rejoice, Shiru Lanu Meshir Tzion, sing to us from the songs of Tzion, and they answer, Eich Nasher Eshri Hashem, how can we sing Hashem's songs on foreign soil? Now, when they say Eich, doesn't mean we shouldn't do that. Eich literally means how could we? We physically cannot. So the Medrash says that these Levim were going to be forced to take their instruments and play the songs of Tilim for their Goyish captors. Instead, they bit off their thumbs, so now they can't play the harps in particular, thumb to play a harp. So therefore, so now they're saying physically, Eich Nashu, we cannot physically do it. Those Levim had such Mesidas Nefesh, they lived, they survived the entire Golos Babel, and they came back to help build the second Beis Mikdash, but they can't be the ones playing the instruments in the same Beis Mikdash for the same reason. That's 50 years already, they're missing their thumbs. So therefore, so the verdict would be, there were Levim over there, but not enough for them to be able to play the instruments in the Beis Mikdash, which is part of the Avodah. So now, years later, when Ezra is coming to Eretz Yisrael, he needs healthy Levium, intact Levium, and he can't find any among his group, and he has to have them bring some. So that would be the one reason why Ezra penalized them.
It looks like the old generation that built up the town
came with them, right?
And he had to penalize the other living people.
So a couple of interesting points in that. First of all, the fact is that Pesukim do make it fairly clear. If you look at earlier in Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah, it does mention that there were meshurim, there were singers who among Jewish people who came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael the first time, and Bepashtus that means Levim. So Marsha actually refers over here to, he explains in Kiddushin, where it also discusses this point. He says that actually that's just it. Because there was a shortage of intact Levim, therefore they had to borrow temporarily, they had to have Yisraelim play the instruments. There's Bechavos, Machloikas, and a number of... The Gemara actually has a Machloikas in a number of places. Who is it that played the instruments in the Beis Mikdash Bechlau? Who plays them Api Alocha? Is it the Levim? Is it Yisraelim? Can it be even the Avodim? So they may have had, under the circumstances, they had to make do with one of those other opinions. But aside from that, also, Rabbi Yaakov Emden actually has a long note on this Gemara over here, a very interesting note. He says that actually what it is like this. When they first came to build the Beis Mikdash, no question, they had a decent number of Levium with them. It's clear from the Pesukim. And we don't mean that all of them, like Rashi is saying, that they were all the ones who had bit off their thumbs. There were among them normal Levium as well. But now you have, again, the building of the first Beis HaMikdash was interrupted for 18 years because you have the whole thing where the Kursim mastered on them to Kurdish and Achashverosh and so forth, and the whole thing was stopped for 18 years. So many of them left and returned to Babel. Now, when Ezra is coming after the second Beis HaMikdash is built, then he's finding that no Levium now want to come to Eretz Yisrael. So you still have, there were, Rabbi Yaakov Emden learns, there were still Levium who stayed behind in Eretz Yisrael. Sure, they're not the ones who were penalized. What we're talking about over here is the Levium who didn't come at that time, or who came and left, or whatever, and now we need them to come in order to restart the Avodah and the Beis HaMikdash, and they're not willing to come, those are the ones we're going to penalize. So in other words, according to him, Parshat, there would be, within the Levium themselves, there are two different groups, the ones that Ezra penalized, and the ones that not. With all of this also, again, according to the Rambam, that it was a gzeira only for that time, then it also works out logically that the people who failed to come, so we're going to penalize them. No reason that we should penalize their descendants after them. But from the Gemara over here, most of the Rishonim understand differently that it was a more long-term thing. Anyway.
Specific mishpachos that came at that time.
So that's the thing also, yeah. So, well, as far as Kohenim, it says particularly there were 4 of 24 mishmaris who came, and they had to re-split them up to recreate 24 mishmaris. Levium, it doesn't specifically say. I mean, it mentions Levium who came, and it mentions like in Sefer Ezra, it mentions like there were 100 odd shoyerim, but not really a very large number. But anyway, according to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, the point is, some of them did remain there throughout all that time, throughout all those difficult years. Sure, Ezra's not going to penalize them, no reason to, but you have the rest of the Shevet, which we're talking about, they're the ones he's penalizing.
I didn't get it. Why did the Levium bite off their thumbs?
Because that way they wouldn't be forced to play their harps and instruments for the Goyim would capture them and take them to Babel.
Not to play because the Goyim are going to force them?
Because the Goyim are going to force them, yeah.
Isn't your name not allowed to force damage to your own body?
In this particular case, there was a valid reason for it. Okay, onward. So that's one reason is Shaloi Olav B'mei Ezra. They didn't come to Eretz Yisrael in the times of Ezra. By the way, in this connection, you're mentioning that Alpi Alocha, who is it that has to play the instruments? Tosfos points out there's also a machlokas in a number of places in Shas, whether Ikir Shira B'peh or Ikir Shira B'kli is the main service of the Shira and the Beis HaMikdash. Is it primarily the vocals or the instruments? Well, vocals, no problem. You have any, even Levim, who are missing thumbs, can still sing. They just can't play the instruments. So if you say Ikir Shira B'peh, then it's not required. Al pi halacha, nevertheless, they still did want to have shira b'kli. They did want to have instrumental music as well. So that's one reason. V'chad omer, the other one says, why the Levium were penalized is k'deshi yismuchu koyanim ala v'metu masan. So that the koyanim will be able to have what to eat when they're tamei. They can't eat truma. They can't eat truma. But like this, they would have maaserishin available for them to eat during that time. So the Gemara says, "Mishleim lemando amashle olu." Well, if you say the Levium didn't come up to Eretz Yisrael, mishum hachi kansinu, then that explains why Ezra is penalizing them. Elo lemando omar kideshi yismuchu olav koyanim b'metu masan. But if you're saying it so that the koyanim have a food supply during the time when they're tamei, what do you mean mishum koyanim kansinu Levium? Is that fair? Because the koyanim need a supply of food, therefore we should penalize the Levium. Now, Ela Kula Alma Knossa Shalai Olav B'mei Ezra. No, everybody agrees that there is a knas because they failed to come up in the times of Ezra. B'hocha Miflegi. The Machloikas rather is as follows, between the two reasons. Marasava Knossa La'anim. One says that the penalty was only for the poor Kohenim to be able to get. So instead of like, it should be exclusively for the Levium, so we're saying that it will go now that poor Kohenim will be entitled to it as well. Omar Sava, whereas the other opinion holds, Kohenim may tumas and anim, you know. Well, look, when a Kohen is tame, in effect, you can consider him poor. Like this, he has a supply of truma, but during the time that he's tame, he can't eat it, whether because of the Valkyrie or whatever kind of truma. So in that case, he's considered poor, and therefore he should have the right to have it. But in other words, it doesn't matter, according to that opinion, whether he's actually poor or rich, because right now we're going to consider him poor for the time being. Well, so the Gemara says, "Bishleim lamando omer knos laniim." Well, now if you say that it's a penalty And it's only meant for the poor kohenim to be able to get my tradition. Well, that explains in that story with the garden why Rabbi Akiva is having it refenced and having the opening only to a Beis HaKvaris, because he's telling Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, look, you're rich, you don't need the my tradition. The whole purpose of the whole purpose. Of giving my submission to the Kohenim was because they're poor. You're not poor, so you have no right to it. So then Elulamanda Amal Kohenim. But if you say that it is outright to the Kohenim and any Kohen is entitled to it, poor or rich, Amaya Hadri the Pistol of Kivri. Then why is Rabbi Akiva doing that? Fine. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is not poor. Still, there's going to be times when he's tomei for one reason or another. He's still not allowed to go into a Beis HaKvaris then, because even a Kohen is tomei. He's still not allowed to go into a Beis HaKvaris. So why would Rabbi Akiva make this permanent change, which is always going to deprive Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah of the Maaseh? Now, this is in parenthesis over here, and in fact, a different girsa, which Rashi seems to have had this girsa, is more straightforwardly, Elo Rabbi Akiva, my time I have, l'pistol of Kivri. Why did Rabbi Akiva turn the opening of the garden to face Beis HaKvaris? If it's a matter of Rabbi Akiva lived long after Ezra, so therefore the knas is still going to be in effect in his times. One way or the other, the Kohenim should be entitled to Maaserishin at least some of the time. So why is Rabbi Akiva doing that? And the answer is exactly that. Hochi Karmalei. What Rabbi Akiva effectively is doing that by moving around the opening to the garden. He's saying to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, "Id ka'osis v'toras knasa. If you want to come and get this ma'aserishin because of the knas, then fine. Islach, then fine. You would be entitled to take it because fine. The knas is that the Levim are not going to get it, or at least that they're not going to get it exclusively. It is available to you as a kohen. So then fine. The id ka'osis v'toras haluka. But if you want to take it on the grounds that you're entitled to a portion of it, leslach, then no, you don't have because you're not." Poor, and therefore you don't have a right to take it. So Tosfos points out then, according to that, it would come out that Rabbi Akiva didn't really know what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was thinking all this time when Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is taking this Maaserishin. What was his thought process? But still, then how can you do that? Tosfos says, what do you mean? You're gonna make it face the Beis HaKvaris. And what happens if Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was thinking I should get it because of the knas, and you've deprived him of it for no good reason? So therefore, Tosfos says, no, what Rabbi Akiva means by that is like this. If you think you should get it on the grounds of the knas, you're rich, so therefore you don't need it for yourself, then don't take it as a knas. Leave it for the poor people. So one way or the other, in other words, you shouldn't be getting it. So if you're getting it as a knas, then you shouldn't. You should be leaving it for the poor people. And if you're getting it because you think you deserve a portion of it, then also you shouldn't be taking it for yourself in the first place, because according to that way of looking at it to begin with, it was meant only for the poor people. In fact, Tosfos says that can also mean what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah meant earlier in the story when it says Akiva Batamilo, when he's saying Akiva is coming with his bag. What he means is, in other words, a bag, that kind of bag is used not only by shepherds, it's used by poor people as well. Meaning, in other words, now we find in various places in Shas that Rabbi Akiva was a gabbai tzedakah. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying, I see what's going on over here. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva wants to deprive me of the maaser from this garden because he wants to be able to take it on behalf of the aniyim. He wants to be able to give it out to Levim or Kohenim who are poor. So therefore, as opposed to he's saying, Vanochaye, but I am living, meaning in other words, I am a direct descendant of Ezra, and I have a living tradition going back to my ancestors from Ezra, that on a Daraisa level, even I as a Kohen, I'm entitled to it. So yes, there's a Knas of Ezra, but even based on the Psukim that he lived before, really Midaraisa, I am, as a Kohen, I'm entitled to it in the first place, and therefore there should be no reason that Rabbi Akiva is depriving me of it. But fine, Vanochaye, basically I'll live with it. But according to Tosfos' way of understanding, in other words, is Rabbi Akiva, it's not that Rabbi Akiva is uncertain what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds, but he's telling him one way or the other, it doesn't really matter whether you hold of knas or whether you hold that you're entitled to a portion, either way, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah doesn't pertain to you. And either way, it should be left for the poor people. So, the Orach HaNer actually has an interesting point over here. He says also, you know, you think about it, if the Maisa, it's true, as we said before, that Ion Yaakov pointed out that conceivably Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah could send somebody through the Beis HaKvaris to go into there and get the Maisa. Why is he giving it up so easily? The fact is, if it's taken through a Beis HaKvaris, the food itself is going to become Tomei. Now, with the Rabbanon, a person eats Tomei food, he himself becomes Tomei. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is not going to do that unless he himself is a time when he himself is Tomei. So now Rabbi Akiva is telling him, look, if you're taking it and you're thinking you're going to eat it in a time when you're Tomei, then fine. Me turning the opening to the garden to a Beis HaKvaris is still not going to prevent you from doing that. Maximum, my submission will become Tomei when it's carried through when you send somebody to carry it through the Beis HaKvaris. Fine, you're going to be Tomei. You might as well eat Tomei food during that time anyhow. But if you come in to eat it, if you come in to take it, but from the point of view of Chalukah, you want to eat it like any of the other Matnas Kahuna, which are eaten only when you're Tahar, then you're not going to be able to. I'm preventing you from doing that because now you can't carry it through a Beis HaKvaris. So therefore, so he's saying, like, look at this, Rabbi Akiva has such chokmah to be able to get me no matter what, basically. So v'anochaye, how can I live? Again, how can I stand up against someone who has such chokmah? So the Gemara says, u'minolon d'lo sliku b'me Ezra. Now, where do we see that the Levium did not come up in the time of Ezra? Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, bo'ek b'tzei melam nohar aboil ahava, Ezra describes, I gathered together the people who were with me, there were a couple thousand people, I gathered them near the river that flows to Ahava, we camped there for 3 days. I was examining throughout all the people on the Kohanim. I didn't find any Levim among there. And as the pasuk goes on to describe, he had to send messengers to the leaders of the Jewish communities nearby to send some Levim. Okay. Since we're mentioning, by the way, that since we're mentioning a change in what happened with the Levim, where we're saying that originally the Levim exclusively were entitled to Maaser Rishon according to Rabbi Akiva, or together with the Kohanim according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and afterwards that changed. So the Gemara, by the way, brings in another change also that happened as far as the status of the Levim among the Jewish people. Amar Rav Chisda, v'tchila lo hayu ma'amidin shoterim elamin alevim. Originally, they would set up shoytrim. So you have shoytrim v'shoytrim. You have the shoftim are the ones who actually paskin the law, who actually judge the dinei Torah, and then you have the shoytrim. The shoytrim are the ones who enforce it. Basically police, but also like bailiffs, like court bailiffs and whatever. They're the shluchei based and whatever. So Amen of Chistav Tchil Elohei Ma'amidim Shoytrim Elamin Alevim. Originally, the Shoytrim were appointed specifically from Shevet Levi. Shenemar, as we find a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, where the king Yehoshaphat, one of the kings of Yehuda, says the Shoytrim Halevim Lefnechem. You should know you have the Shoytrim from Shevet Levi in front of you, and he's telling the Dayanim, in other words, it's your job to make sure that justice is done in Eretz Yisrael and everybody is being judged fairly. Achshav, but now Rabbi Akiva says, Ein ma'amidim shoytrim elam Yisrael. Now we appoint shoytrim only from Yisraelim. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, v'shoytrim harabim barashechem, the many shoytrim at your heads, where Rashi explains the word rabim means Yisraelim, where there's many more Yisraelim than Levim. Now, a big problem with that is there is no such pasuk as v'shoytrim harabim barashechem in the entire Tanakh. So what does the Gemara mean, Shenemar? So Tosfos Yeshanim deals with it, and some other Mephoshim deal with it, and they suggest maybe it's referring to a pasuk that you have in Parashas Dvarim, where Moshe is talking about when he's setting up the Shoytrim, and he mentions that he's going to set up the Shoytrim L'Shivteichem, or other psukim near there that mention that point, that the Shoytrim come from all Shvatim. So in other words, what it would be is, according to that way of looking at it, originally it should have been from all Shvatim, eventually they set it up only from Shevet Levi, and eventually, over time, because there weren't enough Levim, then they went back to the original thing from Moshe Rabbeinu's times, and they went back to appointing them from all the Shvatim. So in that case, that would tie in with what we had before, that there was a point when there weren't enough Levim available for such things, and therefore they had to change things, and the idea would be that it wasn't that from Matan Torah and on, it was always the Levim. In fact, in Moshe's times, it was from all the Shvatim. Later on, they did specifically Levim. One of the Mephoshim, I think also Rabbi Yaakov Emden, says that it might be there was a period of time we find in the Psukim in Divrei Yamim after Yerovam set up his Eglei HaZohav, most of the Kohanim and Leviim moved out of the territory of the Aseres HaShvatim and came to the territory of Yehuda and Binyamin. They wanted to be able to serve in the Bais HaMikdash. They didn't want to have to do with Yerovam and his Eglei HaZohav. So therefore, so they left their Orei Miklat and all, and they moved south. So now the idea is you have a larger number of Leviim in that in among Yehuda and Binyamin than you did before. So they have to find them a job. So therefore they would find them a job, particularly as Shoytzerim. Whereas after that, you had less of an issue with that. So therefore they could go back to appointing them from all the Shvatim. But as far as again, you have this Shoytzerim and Abim Barashechim, which does not seem to be a posik. There is an interesting idea that someone came up with that sometimes we've had before sometimes where the Gemara will very rarely quote something that's not actually from Tanakh as if it was a pasuk. Sometimes it'll be from Sefer Ben Sira, which we've talked about before, is one of the Sfarim Achitzonim, and the Gemara elsewhere has not such good things to say about it, but nevertheless, the Gemara says it does have positive things in it, and there's at least one place in Gemara where it actually quotes something from Sefer Ben Sira as if it was a pasuk. So someone suggested that this actually might be from, he mentions particularly, the books of Chashminoim, which is where we have most of the details of the story of Hanukkah that we all know. I mean, the basic details about the Pach Shel Shemen and all that are in the Gemara and Shabbos, but most of the other details that we always learn as kids about all the battles that they fought and all the other Nisim that they experienced and all the Xeris that there were before that and whatever come from a couple of books called the books of Chashminoim. So someone suggested that actually maybe this posuk comes, maybe this quote unquote posuk comes from those. We have those, but what we have is the original Lashon Kodesh of those books has not been preserved. They were eventually translated into Greek, and the Goyim have them as part of their Bible. For us, it's not part of Tanakh, Lahavdil. And now, in modern times, they've been retranslated into Lashon Kodesh, but it's obviously not the same as the original Lashon Kodesh that they were written in, but there is a suggestion that maybe this was Shotim and Abim Barashechem comes from the original lost Lashon Kodesh version of those books. Maybe. Ha'isha Rabba Perak Asiri. So it starts talking about you have a situation where a woman's husband has disappeared and there's eders that he's dead and then she can remarry and she does so and then her first husband shows up. You have many good Marcus Lehmann stories about that. You have all kinds of things, but the Mishnah talks about the Mishnah talks about all the various consequences of that. One of the consequences is. One of the consequences is the Mishnah mentions that she forfeits her ksuba and all kinds of other things as well. So the Gemara deals with the question of on what grounds is that happening? The Chachamim are penalizing her and she forfeits her ksuba and so forth. How do they have the ability to do that? So Amar Yitzchak, Minayin Shehefker based in Hefker. How do we know that Basin has the ability to declare people's property Hefker where necessary? And therefore, in other words, part of it is because the Gemara is getting into a discussion like this. What kinds of powers do the Chachamim have in terms of overriding Dinim Daraisa? Here we have, in this connection, it mentions in the Mishnah also that this woman, her children from either her first husband or her second husband, after this happens, are going to be considered Mamzerim. Now, the question is, from the second husband, it's easy enough to understand why they'd be Mamzerim. She's still an Eishes Ish. But if she goes back to her first husband, then why should any children she has with him be considered Mamzerim? Wouldn't that mean that you're allowing them to marry Mamzeris, which if they're not Mamzerim, Daraisa, then they're also to do that? So the Gemara is discussing, gets into a whole long discussion of to what degree do the Chachamim have the power to override things Daraisa. So in that connection, the Gemara mentions, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Minayin Shehefker based in Hefker, Shenemar, we find a pasuk from Ezra. There was a serious problem with intermarriage at that time. So Ezra calls together a massive, Ezra and the Sanhedrin, the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, call together a gathering of all the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael, and they announce, V'chol asher lo yavo v'shloshes hayomim, anybody who doesn't come in 3 days from now, v'atzas ha-sorim ha-zkenim, according to the advice of the sorim, meaning the sorim and the skenim, in the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, yochram kol rechoshay, all of his property is going to be forfeit, v'hu yibodom, v'kahal ha-gola, and he will be separated from the congregation of the Gola. So in other words, we see that the Beis Din has the right to expropriate his property, yochram kol rechoshay, and also to put him in cheirim. Rabbi Loza Oma Mehocha. Rabbi Loza says you have another pasuk that shows this point of Hefker based in Hefker. And the pasuk says Eila Hanacholos Asher Nichalu Elazar Akoyin. These, the what it mentions in the previous pasukim, all the division of Eretz Yisrael among the Shvatim. or the inheritances, asher nichal or alazer akoyin v'yeshua ben nun v'roshia obis lamatis ben Israel, which alazer akoyin Yeshua ben nun and the heads of the shvatim bequeath to the shvatim of ben Israel. Now, why are we saying v'roshia ha'obis? V'chimayin roshim etzal obis. What does roshim have to do with obis? If you say v'roshia matis ben Israel, why is the word obis coming in there? Ella loy malach comes to tell you maha obis manchilin b'neim kol mashi yirtzu. Just like a father can bequeath to his son whatever he wants, he can, to a certain extent, override the dinim of Yerusha. It's actually just a long discussion in Gemara Bava Basra, what exactly he can do, but to a certain extent, he has the Ibn Amishum Matona, he can do whatever he wants. But even Mishum Yerusha, he can say, for example, that one of my sons should inherit a larger portion than another one, and that's valid, and he's able to do that. So we learn from that, af roshim and chilim sa'om kol mashi yutzu, the same way the heads of the Shvatim, meaning in this case, the heads of the Sanhedrin, are able to bequeath to the people whatever they want, meaning that they can decide that we're going to take away from one person and give to another, even when it wouldn't be according to the regular din of the Torah. So we learn from that, hefker based in hefker. And in fact, the previous thought also about Ma'aseh Rishon was also, Mefarshim explained, the fact that Ezra could penalize and take it away from the Levim and give it to the Kohanim, or also to the Kohanim, is also based on this idea of hefker based in hefker. So therefore, the point is, in other words, that when you see that there's something involving that, that's not that the Chachamim are overriding a din d'oraisa, that's they have a power that the Torah itself gives them to do that. We'll learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, more about other areas in which the Chachamim have the ability to override dinim d'oraisa. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Golo Lamed Cheshven. This dashmiistic world hides and conceals the godly light in it. There's an energy from Hashem that enlivens and keeps existing every single thing at every moment and keeps on recreating it, but we don't see it. So therefore, it's an olam maloshen halem. Comes Mimos Mashiach, we're going to see the truth, that the true Metzias of the world is only a keli for this godly light that keeps it alive, and we're going to see that Einoid Melevade, there is no other Metzias in the world other than Hashem. Continuing on halachas of Mukta, we were talking about things that are keli shemalachta l'isser, a keli whose basic purpose is to do something that's osser. So therefore, say you're allowed to move it l'tzerach gufam. We said, for example, to use a hammer to crack nuts. You're allowed to move them l'tzerach mekoyimam. For example, you forgot them on a table or a chair. You can move them on Shabbos, and then you can put it wherever you want. The Alter Rebbe does say that yesh misha'omer, when it's mukta gomer, when it's 100% mukta, then there are some who say that it's osser, and it's better to be choshish for that unless it's a makom hefsin. In any case, now you have, let's say you can have the thing itself, you're afraid it's going to get ruined, that you're not allowed to move. It's called mechamel tzel, for example, to move it from the sun to the shade, that you wouldn't be allowed to do on Shabbos. If there's a hefsin meruba, then the Alter Rebbe mentions you can put together with it something that's mutter, for example, a loaf of bread or something, and carry them together. Another example would be tefillin, for example, on muktzah on Shabbos, because you don't wear tefillin on Shabbos, but if they're in a place of bizoyan, then you're allowed to pick them up and put them someplace safe.